Welcome, brothers. Tonight's topic, as you know, is about being a daddy. Believe it or not, it's going to be in your future. May as well learn about it now. A lot of men discover before they start getting gray in their beard or they're really hairy-chested, men start calling them daddy. When I was 21, somebody called me daddy for the first time. It took me aback a little bit. I remember it very strongly, but then I thought, I could live with that. It wasn't long after that I started being a parent for my nephew at the time, so I was stepping into being a daddy rather a long time ago. In the years since, I've had 19 collared boys who called me daddy. I've had a lot of leather sons, too, men who I've never had sex with, but who are my proteges, the people that I've mentored. So I know a lot about this topic. So I'm going to talk in general terms, in terms of history. A lot of this will not be new to you. I'm sure there's all sorts of technical things I could say about this if I looked it up on Wikipedia, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to talk. So throughout all of human history, especially classic history, there's been a tradition where a young man who has no resources, he doesn't have a lot of credibility out there, he doesn't have a lot of money, doesn't have a lot of prospects, but he's willing to trade really shapely ass, you know, in fun circumstances to be mentored by an older man. And it's a nice, fair balance between it, you know, and you get lots of fun, you know, you get to have some honeymoon in your life as an older man, and the younger man gets to learn all about sex, gets to learn about interpersonal politics, gets to learn about relationships, gets to learn about money, get some correction periodically by the daddy because, the boy is going off wildly in a new direction. And the daddy is the one who says, no, you know, I've been down that path and it's a bad one. Stay away from the crystal freak over there. That sort of thing. In many cases. Well, in my history, a lot of the men who I've taken under my wing and collared and taken on as my boy went on to become sirs. I've given them, you know, sir ceremonies, you know, and stuff like that. And it greatly enhanced their understanding of how to be a good sir because they'd learned how to talk from the bottom up. And that's a big tradition, too. The vast majority of the guys that I took on as a boy, and they covered ages all the way from like 21 all the way to 63. So it's more of a state of mind than a description of a physical attribute. But the vast majority of them really did not like getting fucked because they'd been hurt in the past and they had some damage from it and a lot of, you know, serious inhibitions on the topic. So then my job was to teach them how to love being penetrated for sexual purposes, where it became another sexual organ for them. And it takes training. It really does. That's been a large part of my time that I've spent with my boys. Even as a kinky man, I always made sure that every scene included sex. Because, hey, what the hell? It's fun. I like it. You know, I recommend it to everybody. For a long time, back in the 80s and 90s, sex was frowned upon at kinky gay male parties. We were terrified of it. So even using a condom or something, people would like, ooh, that's not my scene, I don't do that, because we were terrified of each other back then. Intimacy was a real breakdown. But I always made sure that if I had me a cute boy and I wanted to show him off at the play party, then I would go out of my way to make sure that it was extra memorable, not just for him, but everybody else there. It's my nature. I'm a showman, what the hell, I'm a big show off. And in my case, I speak only for myself. I came from an extremely broken relationship with my own genetic father. You know, I've done the therapy. I'm not looking for sympathy. It's just my history. This is who I am. And I made a decision, a conscious decision, as soon as I got out of the nest, that I renounced everything that I'd learned. Because what I'd learned about being a man was never explain, never apologize. And whoever hits the hardest and yells the loudest wins. And I knew I didn't want that, but I had to find philosophies that could fill the gap. If I gave those away to the universe, what do I really want to use? So I went to a lot of self-help workshops, such as EST, such as Landmark Forum, the Advocate Experience, which was the gay version of EST back in the old days. And there was a lot of philosophy going around, and it really appealed to me. It was hard for me at first. I had a lot of resistance, but then I realized I needed to let it in. Once I did, it was really nice. But what I had to learn was how not to be a man, but also how to be a man. And I grew up in a household with six sisters, my mother, and a succession of female dogs, and a father who actively hated me. So I had a very strong, passionate desire to find out what there was elsewhere in terms of daddy. Now, I've never been anybody's boy. That's neither good nor bad. It's just what happened. I've always been a certain training. The men who took me under their wing to mentor me so long ago trained me from that viewpoint, that they would teach me how to top where they would be the bottom, and they would say, okay, it's better if you do it that way, that sort of thing. So it was great. And I honor their memory, and I will never stop thanking them ever, because it was a very powerful formative part of my life. But so then when that stopped, when my mentors died, I continued parenting. I've raised six foster kids. The full adulthood. And one of the things that I'm proud of, that I'll always be proud of, is that at no point with any of them did I ever use any form of abuse, mental, emotional, physical, sexual, none of it. I was always fair. I was always there for them. I gave them what I had craved most as a child, which is something I would give to anybody who thinks, oh, I could never be a daddy. Everybody's expecting me to be a daddy. Oh, I couldn't do it. I don't know how to be a daddy. Well, be what you always wanted to be, what you wanted to have when you were younger. Even if you had a really sensational dad, go from there, obviously. But, you know, if like so many men, you suffer from male grief because you don't have a complete relationship with your father. Dad didn't teach you. Dad was remote. Dad didn't approve of you because you were gay. Who knows? Whatever it is. You can use that grief as a power source to become a better man and a better dad for somebody, a better mentor, a better role model, a better leader, whatever it shows up for you. I have found when I mentor somebody who wants to step into daddyhood, it tends to happen late in midlife crisis. So I'm going to talk about midlife crisis. Have I talked about it here? Okay. This is important. This is key. I say that a lot, but it's true. As soon as males, I'm not talking about gay males, I'm not talking about kinky males, I'm talking about all males, as soon as we get hair on our balls, we have this built-in wired need to fit in. That's why there's so much bullying in grades, in junior high. Because people are starting to peck at each other, saying, you don't fit in, you're wrong, you're broken, you're inappropriate, you're a geek, you're a nerd, you're a fag, or whatever. So everybody stifles, you know, whatever impulses they're trying to fit in. Be careful, be careful, be careful. But there are sides to ourselves that we repress for a long time, for a long time. But then when a man looks in a mirror and he sees wrinkles, he sees gray hairs that don't go away, the more you pluck them out of your beard, the more they keep coming back with a vengeance. And he sees the day coming when he won't have quite so much young and pretty left. He starts thinking, okay, I want to know what I can do about me. I'm tired of being everybody else's expectations of me. I want to break out of the box, but it's scary because outside the box is an infinitude of choices. It's a little scary. That's why they call it midlife crisis. Men do it starting right around 39, and I've seen men do it as late as 55. But sooner or later it happens. And when it happens, the reason why it's called a crisis, I assert, is that that is a female name for the circumstances. Because in a heterosexual relationship, when a woman sees that her husband is starting to go to the gym a lot more, and he's starting to get all pumped up, and he's starting to dye his, you know, his mustache or his beard or his hair, and he's starting to flirt with, you know, 17-year-old, you know, hairdressers, she's a little panicked because they've still got kids at the house. Okay, so that means that it's a crisis as gay males. We don't have that. What we have instead is it's a natural male passage. It's not a crisis unless you make it a crisis. Say, by suddenly deciding you don't want to be with your husband anymore and throwing him over the side and finding yourself an 18-year-old with a tambourine on roller skates. You know, that would be kind of a crisis for a long-term male-male relationship. So obviously that would apply. But what I've had to do when I'm coaching guys who are going through midlife crisis. Oh, and by the way, sidebar. Back in the old days, probably 90% of gay males who started shifting from wearing leather to living leather, meaning actually doing kinky stuff and living the lifestyle and being part of the tribe, 90% of them did it when they hit midlife crisis and no earlier. That's why it's such a joy when we find precocious ones. The early adopters, the ones who are self-aware enough. Now, it's happening more and more. See, the 90% number is an old number pre-internet. Now, because so many people are in communication with their fantasies, you know, they can go to those secret websites and enjoy them, then they're going to start saying, okay, I want some of this, and I want it now. Because the tragedy is the man who discovers it about himself when he's in his 70s and 80s. Now, you got to do it while you still got some vigor in your life. That's kind of the optimal thing. Now, so on that same topic, what if a man feels, okay, I'm this age, but I don't know shit. What good am I as a daddy? I'm a failure before I even start. I run into that constantly in my mentoring. And I say, you have no idea. You are worth your weight in diamonds and rubies this way. Not someday when you've, you know, had 12 years to practice. Now. The reason why you're valuable, okay, in 2017 is that there is a crying, desperate need for daddies. What these young men are looking for is somebody that they can admire. Because, not because of perfection, but because someone who is true, who is authentic, who is wise. So let's talk about wisdom for a second. Being wise means that you have figured out how to be a gay man in a world that is often hostile to us. You've learned how to survive and thrive. They haven't learned that yet, these younger men. They're still trying to figure this shit out. They don't know the ins and outs of the local area. They don't know. They don't have the social connections that you do, that you take for granted. Well, of course. You know, they don't have your track record with relationships. All that stuff is stuff they're dying to learn, and it's not built into their skill set. They got to learn from somebody. And if you are kind and you're generous with what you know and you have a lot of rocking good fun sexually and say, whoa, 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 you're not going out in that. You know, you're going to get arrested if you got your ass shown in public. I didn't know that. Little things like that add up. That's why it's so important that we have daddies. The problem that we have in 2017 is Peter Pan. Okay. Peter Pan syndrome describes the man in his 40s, 50s, 60s who is dyeing his hair. You've seen it. The older man who's got a black beard and black eyebrows and black everything, except he's got pure white roots because he hasn't dyed it lately. And you see it and you go, well, that's interesting. What he's doing is he's still under the impression that he needs to compete with the 23-year-olds. He's not owning his age. He's not owning the miles that he's earned that are on his odometer. And it's a problem because he doesn't realize that if he just owns his age, see, what he thinks is the stereotype that you got to be young and pretty in order to compete. But the man who steps into his power as a mentor, as an elder, as a daddy, I mean, I'm talking about two different phases. I'll talk more about elder in a little while. But someone who steps into his power as a daddy and owns it, even if he's insecure as hell, but he's starting to play with it, he's going to have boys flying butt first at him from every direction. It's easy to find out. You just go to the local DILF, D-I-L-F, Daddy I'd Love to Fuck Party. The man who is terrified to own his age because all he's got is programming from the gay community. You know, if you're old, you're a troll. You have no value. You've got to be muscular. You've got to have a big dick, and if you don't, come back next lifetime. You've got to have a really hard dick. If you don't, we don't want you. This is all stereotypes from the community. And the fact of the matter is that there's so much more to a man than trying to pretend that he's still, you know, young and vital. You know, he may have, you know, a few tricks up his sleeve still. But the fact of the matter is that there's so much more to that man than being a portable, mobile sex toy. When he owns every part of himself as a man, as a grown-up, as a mature, masculine male. You get the idea. Then what happens is that heads turn when he walks into the room with confidence. Suddenly, younger men want to stand a little bit taller and puff their chests out a little bit more to impress him, to stand with him and say, I admire this man. I like being around him. I want to be like him someday. Well, there's a big need for that. It doesn't require perfection. It requires honesty. It requires humility. It requires using strength instead of force. It requires being the kind of man that you know you can be. Not fake, not on all the time. Who the hell's got that kind of energy? But being true to your feelings, and people notice. We have a way, I say we, men who own their age, have a way of calming everybody else down. I'm going to talk about elephants in Asia. I love saying stuff like that. People always chuckle. What? But somehow or another, I always include some title justification in there. Be patient. In Asia, for millennia, they've been using elephants as mobile, living, pooping bulldozers. You know, pick up tree trunks and carry them over there and all that. A lot of labor, you know, that they do. Well, every once in a while, they need to go get more elephants out there in the jungles. And so they'll build a big stockade, and they'll panic the elephant herd into going into the stockade. The elephants are freaking out. They're goring each other with their tusks. They're panicking. They're screaming. They're trying to get out, and they're just full of stress. They discovered many, many centuries ago that if you take a few tame elephants and put them in the stockade first, and when the panicked ones come in and they go, well, he's calm. I guess I better calm down too. Okay. So there's not nearly so much damage. There's not so much stress. That applies to the men in the community who own their age. People have a way of settling down. Because we set the tone, not because we're being bossy, not because we're being patriarchal, which is the single worst word in the human language, in the English language, but because nobody wants to disappoint that sweet and good-hearted and true man. Nobody wants to be the one that poops in the punch bowl. They want to be the ones that maintain the spirit that that man brought into the room. I've seen it thousands of times. And this is true. Because if you've ever been to an event where the law of the jungle prevails, where everybody's in their shit, and everybody's unhappy, and they're not sure what the hell's going on, and they don't know if they're feeling welcome, and they're feeling pissed off as a result, and things are just not fun. You just can't wait to get away from it. Versus you go to the space, and people are mellow, and people are kind, and people are generous, and people are just not laying any shit on anybody else. And everybody goes, oh, I can relax now. And that's what causes the event to be a success. And nobody will be conscious about it. They just think, what makes us so different? All it takes is one admirable, lovable, respectable, you know, kind of guy. And all of a sudden, everybody else settles down. It's wonderful. I mean, I don't know if I've said this part. If I have, then I'll erase it from the tape. But I have the ability to go into a bar that is noisy. And people are not interested in what's going on. There's a fundraiser over on the stage over there, guy with the microphone. The guy with the microphone is trying to have a fundraiser. The louder he goes, the louder the crowd goes. Bunch of drunk rowdies that are from out of town. They don't care. They just want to cruise. They just want to grab ass and drink. And they don't care about that. Well, it's war, and it's escalating. But so the MC will say, does anybody here want to say something on that topic? I'll raise my hand. And within, no kidding, 30 seconds, the entire bar will go silent. And they want to hear what's being said. Not because I'm saying, you fuckers better get in line or show some respect. That's bullying. That's force. That doesn't work. All I do is I talk to them the same way I'm talking to you now. Same tone of voice, same volume. And everybody settles down, even the really, really drunk guys, because they'll say, what happened? It got quiet in here. I've done this hundreds of times. The reason why it works is because I'm being true. I'm being present in the moment. I'm time slicing now, now, now. I'm being in the moment, and I'm being absolutely true and authentic. I'm not putting on any kind of act. I'm just speaking from the heart, the same way I would talk to a very dearly loved one, and that's what comes across. Transactional analysis is the study of how people interact with each other. When you understand that, then it creates magic wherever you are. For instance, if I'm talking to 200 15, 16-year-olds during their lunch break, and if I was to pretend to be their age, oh, that Britney Spears, she's just a ginchiest, isn't she? Well, I wouldn't get very far with those kids. They would tune me out instantly. If I came in with the attitude that I know everything and they're a bunch of stupid little kids that should pay attention because it'll make better people of them someday, that's not going to go very far either. But if I honor the humanity in that room, if I see these young adults as young adults who are dying to become full-on adults, and I come into the room with that attitude, they settle down. And then the teachers who are sitting in on the talk come up to me afterwards and say, I've never seen that many kids be that quiet for so long. And then a year later, I come back and I say something and they say, you've already told us about that. They remember every single thing that I've said. And I'm not coming at them with anything except love and, you know, that which I bring them, which is, you know, my gift of life wisdom, which is what they're starved for. Well, that's true for boys, too. They're not looking for perfection, I promise you. If they are, they're not worth your time. So I'm going to talk arrogantly. And it is my goal for every possible daddy out there to be as arrogant as I am. Because this is good stuff. This is good information. I've alluded to this earlier. I'll do it many times. Just because someone is needy does not obligate you to be feedy. It means that someone who just says, oh, I want you to be my daddy, well, they're going to jump through some fucking flaming hoops before they get within a mile of me. I may give them a chance, but if it's not working, I got to let them down because there's better fish in the sea. I deserve the best, and so does every man listening to this. There's not enough of us to go around. The market for mature masculine male who is comfortable inside of his skin and who accepts himself the way that he is, that market is not saturated, and it never will be within our lifetimes, because too many men have not owned their age, and they're so busy beating themselves up for not being 23 anymore that they're not noticing that which is all around them. They're surrounded by piles of treasure in the form of the best kind of boys. What do I consider to be the best kind of boys? As I said, I've had the full range, many races of ages, the full range of body types as my boys. What I'm looking for is character. What I personally look for when I look for somebody who's going to be my collared boy or slave or submissive is that they have to be true to their word, because I do not have the time or the energy or the patience to teach someone adult skills that they have to make their own mind up about before they meet me. If I say, I need you at that time, and they show up on time, ding, 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 we have a winner. You've now advanced at stage two. What I look for is someone who, when I say, by tonight, I need you to do this thing, then they do it with all their heart. Well, that's a big plus, because I always give 100%. I never hold back. It may not be perfect. It may not be stronger than 20% of what I could do at my best if I'm particularly weak that day, but I still give them 100% of what I've got every single time. I've never failed that to do that, because that's what they're looking for. Because they have to earn my collar, but I have to earn their respect every damn day. And the way that I do that is by being true from moment to moment, by being my true and authentic self without holding back and without apology. If I screw up, of course I'll apologize. But I mean, I'm not going to beat myself up if I cry in front of them. I'm not going to beat myself up if I say, you know, 99.9% of the time, I like to be the one throwing things around. I need you to take care of me now. Whatever's so for you. And they have to be okay with that too. Because again, the worst thing you have to worry about when you become a capital S symbol, I'll talk about that. Okay, there's many different degrees of this. But let's say that you become a very well-known sir, master, daddy in the community. It's way too easy for people to then start putting you into a box that you have to break out of. You have to be yourself, even if it means you have to express yourself in a wildly radical way just to surprise people. Because otherwise they're going to try and say, oh, no, you can't be versatile. You've got to be a sir. You've got to. Or you show up in shorts and flip-flops and a Hawaiian shirt. And they say, no. You're not as good looking as you are in leather. Go change. No. Be okay with the whatever it is that you want to explain. If you want to giggle like a little girl and be silly and faggoty on stage, you know, in front of everybody with a microphone, that's okay too. You have to be true. It'll make you more endearing to the people who care the most and who have the most to contribute. Really. Being one note all the time is boring, and it tells people that you're withholding, that you're not being true, and they don't trust you. But if you give entirely of yourself, you're giving everybody else permission at the same time. You're setting the tone. I want to talk about formalizing the process, about being a daddy, about being the kind of daddy that really stands out there, you know, really, really is outstanding. Okay, I'll say it that way. I've talked a bit about coloring. I want to talk a lot more about it today. People ask me, so what the hell's that about? You know, right now here in this room, I have two beautiful slaves that are wearing my collar. I made the chain, you know, and I specially chose the lock and all that other stuff. Well, it is my declaration that these are special. These are set apart. There's plenty of, you know, wannabes. There's 80,000 guys in line behind them. I know that. They know that. But this is my declaration. Is none of that matters to me. They're so special that they belong in my life long term. They're not just a trinket that, you know, I trade up from at some point. I can't see how I could. Because they've proven their beauty to me inside and out thousands of times. I am a patriarch. I create families. It's my nature. I'm not just a daddy for one. I'm a daddy for many, both sexually and non-sexually, for many people. I have a huge extended leather family. I have a lot of leather sons. I have a lot of proteges. I have a lot of, you know, ex-boys. I've got a lot of people who love me that I've taken under my wing over the decades, and I'm happy with that. What makes me able to do that is that I have the wit and perception and notice quality when I find it. So it's okay to be picky. It's perfectly okay to be picky. Because if somebody's going to be in your life, you don't want it to be stressful for you or for him. You know, where he's so unhappy that you are the way that you are and wishes you'd be something different. Here's a big key from somebody who's about to celebrate a 27th anniversary with a wonderful husband. You don't try and change each other. You rejoice in that which makes you special. That's true in any relationship. You find reasons to treasure them because the tools that are missing from my toolbox are supplemented by what the tools in their toolbox is and vice versa. That we all add value to the family because we're not the same. Because we each bring something special. Is your recording? Yes, I am. Okay. When someone applies, because they do apply, sometimes I have to let them down. And I did that, was it yesterday? Yeah. I was playing with a man. He was applying, frankly. And absolutely, we did not click. I gave him two chances. And then I wrote him an email. It was very kind, but it was very clear. It said, you know, I hope you find what you're looking for. This isn't working for me. I don't think we're a good match. Specifically in this particular case, and I name no names, no matter how much I exhorted and pled with him to please give me feedback, give me reactions, because I thrive on that. In vaudeville, they have something called calling someone a lox, L-O-X, meaning they're laying there like a dead fish. It's not a thing you want to have on stage, and it's not something you want in bed. I like them lively, I like them fully self-expressed, and I like them, you know, romping good, stomping good time to the best of their ability, and they don't hold back, and neither do I. Like I said, I don't do anything unless I'm putting 100%, and I want it back. I deserve 100% back. And when I get that, then that's when the calling goes on. And so now let's take it to the next step. What I also do is I do ceremonies. I don't expect everybody else to do that, but I want to talk about this. I want to talk about being a highly visible, highly respected daddy in the community. That includes doing ceremonies. So I'm going to talk about that. If someone impresses me with their style, with their wit, their intelligence, their creativity, their spirit, their courage, then I'll say, come to this event. I invite you. They'll come to the event. And I'll give them a token of esteem in front of a bunch of other people. And then I will hold a little ceremony. I'll stand by that man. I'll put my hands on his shoulders and stand to his side. And I will say, this is why I admire this man. This is what I see in him. This is why I'm giving this ceremony here, presenting him this. As a man of the community who is respected, who has credibility, I give that credibility to him with both hands because I don't really need it. I've got plenty. But this man may not have yet impressed the people around him with his many, many values, you know, personal valuables. So then by my saying those things about him, it becomes true for everyone listening. They all say, I endorse this, hear, hear. And from that point, every bottom boy in the room is going to say, ooh, new meat, I'm going to go for that. But see, I've been doing this for decades. There are people here in town, and this is true. This is not victimhood, I'm just telling the truth. There's a small number of people here in town that would be really happy if I died in a fire. And it's just true. It's always been that way. When you're highly visible, it can happen. But having said that, you could talk to each one of them, and if they were drunk, They would unwillingly admit that my big talent is I'm good at finding the new superstars. I'm very good at that. That's what I'm dedicated to in the world. So I'm sort of a super daddy in that I actively look for other men who are on the rise. I call myself a Saturn rocket booster. You guys know what that is. That's a huge rocket that, you know, a little tiny, you know, place for astronauts on the top. You need something that big in order to get the hell out of the atmosphere. Well, my job as a super daddy is to be that booster, to help that man who's starting on his journey, stepping into his power, owning his, you know, his wonderfulness and finding out just how big and strong his wings really are. Once he hits orbit, then it's on to him. He has to find his path. I'm not going to guide him because he has his own journey. I'm there with the pom-poms going, yay, yay, as he heads off towards the galaxies. But I like to see them go forth and make a difference in the world. The payoff for me, I call it embracing the ripples. Okay? If I help a man who needs help, and he has proven himself worthy of all that, of the extra helpings that I give him, all the, you know, the juicy nuggets of wisdom I can spew at him, if I'm able to get him to the point where he is stepping way the hell out there out of his comfort zone and making a difference in the world, he causes ripples in the world. Well, long after I'm gone, that man will still be out there making ripples in the world. And from there, ripples outward from there. And from there, all these people that he's influenced, that's something I could really dig. So that's my payoff for doing what I do. I love to see that because a tribe, a leather community that has lots of serene, secure, well-seasoned, and evolved men is a better community. That's why I do the work. That's my payoff. Not doing it for sex. Not promising them penis. Not asking them for money. It's funny. I went to the Butchman's experience years ago, long before I knew any of you guys. And we were talking about mentoring because that was a big topic for me. There was a guy who said, oh, yeah, yeah. I mentor people. I charge $250 an hour. I said, really? How much did the people who mentor you charge you? He said, well, that's different. You know, a man's got to make some money. I said, yeah. No, I disagree. You know, that's why I do what I do, because nobody charged me. I don't see it as being particularly ethical to charge other people. The reason why he can get away with it is because so few men are ready to do teaching. The problem is a lot of the men in my generation experience, they gave up a long time ago. I know a lot of them. And I gave up on trying to convince them. I would go up to some man, gorgeous man in his 60s, and I'd talk to him. I'd get to know him. I'd say, I got a request for you. You don't have to do any work. You find the way you are. Just please be visible. I said, we need you guys. We need Kinky Grandpa. We've been saving a place for you at the table a long time. The world, we miss you. We need you back. We need you to be role modeling. If nothing else, just by being here. Just by being visible. They look at me, they smile, they back away, and I never see them again. I'm not lying. I've had that conversation over 600 times. And I've tried many different variations of it to try and figure out what might work, but it doesn't work. Too many of the men of my generation gave all during the bad years, and they're not willing to do anything that might make them in the slightest bit uncomfortable. They are scared little forest creatures. I have no scorn for them. I understand. My heart was broken too. I just had a different reaction. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about being an elder. It's the next step beyond being a daddy. We don't normally talk about this. This is all just what I say. But I assert that it's damn true. See, I've been a daddy for a long time. I've raised small kids. I've raised teenagers. I've had a lot of boys in their 20s and 30s. As I've gotten older, I've gotten more of the opinion that I need to not stress myself out so much. So I tend to choose, I like my chicken well seasoned. And that's just my preference as I'm getting older. I'm 61. And I don't have a lot of patience for somebody who's going to be a lot more energy than I plan to put out. That's fine. I can be picky. But what people don't realize, and I tell them this all the time, is if you step into your power as a daddy, as a sir, as a master, and just go with it, your value never goes down. Ever, until you say that it does. The whole gay stereotype of being a troll, you know, who invited that elderly, whatever derogatory term to this party. Well, I'm here to tell you right now, the way that I am right now, I am meat on a stick for thousands of men in this town. I made an assertion, I'm not sure if it was to you, but we were over at the hole on Sunday afternoon, and I said, I was talking to somebody else, and I said, I promise you, and this is as true as I'm standing here, if I put my mind to it, there is no man in this building I could not have, and I'm old, and I am fat, and I'm covered in gray hair, and yet, I know it to be true, because I've seen it so many times. Can I tell you how many times, and this is not a brag, this is just true, that the man who owns his daddyhood, the man who owns his mastery, the man who steps into his power and all the rest of those things I've said a zillion times, it's hugely, hugely, hugely attractive on so many levels for so many men. And, I mean, I go to some leather event designed just for guys in their 30s and 40s. and I will be easily the oldest guy in the building. But without my asking for a single one of them, I'll get at least half of the men in the bar will come up to me and hug me. I'll go to a fundraiser. I'll arrive too damn early, not realizing at all. All there is a bunch of sport teams, all these guys in their 20s and 30s. And I get mobbed. They come up to me. They pull off my shirt. They say, oh, I got to feel your tummy. Oh, let me rub. Here, leave some of that for me. I'm going, well, there you go. I mean, this is true. I was at Urban Moe's a couple of weeks ago, just having a nice Saturday evening dinner with my husband. I was wearing some kinky gear, and sometimes I dress up. And I'm sitting there, and we're holding hands, we're looking at each other's eyes, we're very gooey. You know, whatever table we sit at is a lovebird table. It's very romantic and sweet. Well, about 10 feet away, there's a group of four or five tall, extremely buff and handsome men in their late 20s. And they're lifting up their shirts and comparing their abs when they flex them. They're flexing their arms and feeling each other's biceps and laughing and talking. And Dennis and I are noticing and going, oh, you know, youthful, fun, how nice. So later, much later, I get up to go pee. And three of them followed me into the bathroom. And they're saying, oh, daddy, oh, you want to fuck him, don't you? And the guy in question is rubbing his butt against my cock. And they're rubbing me and saying, oh, your hairy front and back. Oh, my God, that's so hot. And so I really wasn't looking for it at that time. It was nice to get the external validation. Yay. But that's not what I live for. But so then each time they would say something propositional, I'd say something funny in return. It's my gift. I have that ability. So it's gently and lovingly fending them off. You know, they'd be beeping my dick and I'd say, don't be too impressed. It's just a clip-on. Or, you know, whatever. And after a while, then I very gently brushed them off and left the bathroom. And I told Dennis and our waiter, and they were just astonished. Like, how come that happens to you? Well, one, I was wearing some kind of gear, which they found very attractive. But I was a symbol to them. They didn't know me, but they wanted to find out more about me. Because it was a conversation starter. It's called social grease. We talked about it before. It's also called nonverbal communication through what we wear. But I'm symbolic to them because I'm a man who owns my daddyhood. So they're all calling me daddy. And some man who's standing there lonely, who's unsure of himself, and he's got this story in his head running that he's convinced himself of. That, you know, I'm old and I'm no longer as virile as I used to be and I can't compete and I have no worth in this world. He's just telling him some lame-ass story. And it's not the truth. If he has the nature to be a dominant, not hyper-dominant, but just likes to be a top type of guy, and he's willing to be kind and generous with some younger man, and I'm not talking about financially generous. That's a different thing. That's generous with a dollar sign at the end. That's a whole different story. He will never be lonely, and he will never have any trouble getting laid. And I've said this a few times to some of the people in this room. That's okay. Sooner or later, it soaks in. Because the world is starved for men, especially of my generation, who own their age. I promise you, it's insanely fun to be this guy, to just be comfortable inside myself, that it's, I'm here to just wave at you from the water and say, the water's really fine. Come on in. It's really good. Have some fun with it. Be playful. Be joyful. Be lighthearted. You don't have to be grim about it. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for the man who they can trust. They're looking for the man who is, you know, doesn't take himself too super seriously, but he has a strong sense of himself. Well, that attracts them. So I'm going to tell you a story. This is way past in my history. I was in the Navy. I was on a ship, about 1,300 guys on the ship. And there was one man, he was like 22, 23, who worked in the medical spaces. They called him pecker checkers back then. And, you know, he's just like a nurse assistant type of guy. But a whole bunch of us would call in sick, basically. We'll say, oh, I'm going to go down to medical spaces. I've got a, you know, gangrenous toenail or something. You know, whatever. You know, they just an excuse to go down there because we all wanted to be around this guy. We didn't understand him because he was comfortable inside himself. He was calm. He was like a Zen Buddhist monk. And I thought, I'm not feeling that way inside. Now I want to figure out how he's doing it. I figured if I just act a certain way, I didn't get that he had earned that. That he was comfortable because he had some, you know, life experiences that had gotten him to that point. I thought it was just like, you know, putting on a new costume or something like that. You know, I was young, I was dumb, I didn't know any better. But I wanted to observe him, if nothing else. The point is, where it brings it back to the main topic today, I know I'm not perfect. I got flaws like you would not believe. It would take me days to list them all. I'm okay with them because they are my foibles. I have learned at this stage in my life to laugh about my foibles. Because if I'm going to be this way, I may as well be good at it. And I will do what it takes to get over my big old drama queen self when it happens. If I'm a jerk, I will atone. If I am, you know, tired and crabby, I'll say I'm not at my best and I need some space now. And then next time we do get together and I have that energy, I will make it really nice. But in order to do that, though, I have to be clear on, one, who I am and how I'm feeling and to be true to those. So that's Daddy. That's Elder. Elder is someone who even doesn't really need to have a boy, but needs to have solid family. See, that's what I say. I'm projecting. This is what I say about me. I suggest to anybody listening to this, we need a hell of a lot more elders. Because, let's say my name is Papa Tony. You know, it has been for decades. Well, I see myself more as Grandpa Tony now. You know, Dick doesn't work anymore. That's okay. I've adjusted. I can still really lay him out really well still, you know, with lots of other possibilities. The fact of the matter is that I am okay with getting older. I fear it. I've never had anybody tell me what it's about. All the men who could have told me what it's like to get older, when things change in your life, when things start falling apart, those men long ago died. I don't have that. I had a conversation with some women who are very much into old guard and protocol and all that. And they're very strong on that topic. And we have our disagreements. But I said, I want, you know, and they were getting real jumpy because, you know, I wasn't buying whatever it was that they were selling. I said, you know, I'm really jealous of you. I said, why? How could that be? And I said, you have the hope of having somebody counsel you from a superior position who loves you and wants you to do well. I said, I don't have that. I don't have that at all available to me. This is true. On the West Coast, there are three people in my category. And no, four. And we're actually all really stressed out about it because we're the rock for everybody else. But we don't have that for each other. When we see that each other, then we talk to each other on a very different level. Because we are people who were there during the bad years. We've been through the flames more than most people. We were witnesses to it, and we sustained a lot of people who needed a solid rock to cling to during the bad years. But we didn't have that. Somebody else who we could look up to, older than us. We just don't have it. It's not a complaint. It's just what is happening. So what we have to do is we all have to be that for each other. We have to break down when it's appropriate, when it's time, around people who want to catch us in the trust exercise. We have to be able to just say, okay, yes, I'm older than you are, I have more experience, and I need a friend. Because it's very difficult sometimes, you know, I want to be, you know, this pillar of upright, you know, whatever for everybody else, but there's times I have to be vulnerable too. There's times I have to grieve around people that I can trust who are not going to think less of me. So how do I express that? So being an elder, let me see. Right now, in this time in history, in 2017, what I just described to you is true. But it's not going to be true forever. There's going to be a time when you guys are going to be in this position. you know, being older. My request, and this is only a request, request can be declined, accepted, or renegotiated, that you turn around and you help the next guys in line. So we're going to talk about Maslow's hierarchy of need. Okay, it's a pyramid. Raise your hand. How many here have heard of Maslow's hierarchy of need? Right. So it's something easily Googleable. It's a pyramid. Down at the bottom of the pyramid are the very basic things. Oxygen, sleep, food, shelter. It's still, you're in survival mode at that point. Next few levels up, I forget what some of the other things are. It's easy to look up. But it goes from survival to thriving. I think that's the term they use. But the very peak of the pyramid, the absolute peak of human experience. Magnum, what is that? Do you remember? Self-awareness. Being self-actualized. If you look that up, looking up self-actualization, one of the attributes of someone who is self-actualized doesn't mean you're perfect, but it means you know who you are and you make no apologies for it and you own your foibles and all that. Well, that's a very evolved place to be. Well, as a daddy, as a sir, as a master, as a, you know, an elder, the sign of being self-actualized is when you turn around and you help others to get to that same space. Come join me. It's a generous thing. Reason why is because we're better off together if we're all thriving. Again, back to the original topic a few weeks back about competition versus cooperation. It ties in with what I said before about the tools in my toolbox. If we all share that which we are, that which we know, that which we understand about ourselves and about others, everybody benefits. That's what Tribe is about. Gay Leatherman's community, we've had Tribe for decades. It broke down hard during the bad years, but it is rebuilding. Fits and starts. It's not perfect, but it is rebuilding. That also includes, and I assert, heterosexuals. You'll meet female daddies in the community. You think, does not compute. Well, it's where it works for them. And when you get to know them, it makes more sense. I'm sure you've met, if you've been around a while, you'll meet some female boys, B-O-I's. And I'm not putting any scare quotes around that. I honor every one of them. Because what they're doing is what we do. They find it admirable. They find it attractive, they find it to be something that works. Because, again, it's a very honorable relationship to be a daddy with a boy, several boys. What happens a lot is in other families, where some daddy will have a bunch of boys. You go out to the DILF party, and there's Frank, who's built like a bowling ball, and he always has six or seven really hot, sexually attractive, fit young men with him, and they're all adoring him, and he fucks them all, and they're all okay with that because he's got plenty to share, I assume. But the market is not saturated. I mean, one of the most successful leather daddies I've ever met in my life was Dave Murdoch up in LA and for a while in Palm Springs. Short, heavy set man. Had absolutely none of the traditional factors of being attractive. But he had more ultra-satisfied leather boys through his life than just about anybody I know. And it's not about the externals at that point. They're not looking for that. They're looking for somebody that they can stand a little bit taller next to and say, yeah, I'm associated with this. I'm the kind of quality that can attract and retain something like this. I've earned this collar. And see, that's what they're looking for.